for about 3 months, just the other side of Finsbury Square. So it's nice to be back in the area, and nice to have the opportunity just to think for a few minutes together about the Christmas story. And we're actually going to do that this morning, just by, or this afternoon, even by thinking about just one verse, which is John chapter 1 and verse 14. So if you've got your little John's Gospel, it's about three quarters of the way down, page number 3 there, where the little number 14 is. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. Now you might be thinking, hold on, that doesn't really tick the nativity boxes. Maybe you're after the warm familiarity of the stable scene, the angels, the cuddly sheep. And now you're thinking, hold on, mate. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That is not what I dragged myself out of the office for on a busy Wednesday lunchtime. You'd not be alone in feeling like you've been shortchanged when it comes to your nativity. Parents in recent years have been reporting and complaining how the story has been changed when they've turned up to watch their kids' nativity performances. So that rather than getting carols and action focused on the baby Jesus with a cast of Mary and Joseph, shepherds, angels, wise men, and an awkward innkeeper, instead people are getting nativities with pop soundtracks and parts for aliens, punk fairies, footballers, Elvis Presley, and in one controversial instance, a drunken spaceman. If the nativity is under threat, it makes you wonder what other aspects of a traditional Christmas might soon be at risk. Turkeys, stuffed, baubles out on a limb, advent calendars, their days are numbered. Well, what we are looking at today is not your traditional nativity. Here is John's take. John was one of Jesus' very best friends, and this is his version of the Christmas story. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That's it. All the business with the donkey, the stable, the angels, the wise men, the innkeepers, all of that in just 9 or 10 words. But John isn't trying to tell us everything he could possibly tell us in his account of Jesus' life. He's trying to tell us what he thinks we really need to know, what he thinks we really need to be clear about. And here, really, he's trying to tell us who Jesus is. He's trying to tell us what Jesus came to do, and he's trying to show us why we should care. So that's what we're going to think about just for the next couple of minutes. As John gives us here, really, the very heart of the nativity. Firstly, he wants to show us who Jesus is. When John says the Word became flesh, he's talking about someone being born. Now, currently around the world, about 350,000 babies are born every day. So it's not quite one born every minute. In fact, it's about 4.5 born every second. So to understand why John is so excited about this birth, we need to understand who it is that's being born. Who is this Word? Because you see, the word Word there, it could get a bit confusing, but stick with me. It isn't just a word, it's a name. Notice the capital W. In this introduction to his life story, the name Jesus doesn't actually get used until verse 17. But right back at the beginning, right back at verse 1, John has introduced Jesus to us by calling him the Word. And he's told us some extraordinary things about the Word, including the headline that the Word was God. When John says the Word became flesh, he's saying to us that at Christmas, the remarkable truth is that God, in all his glorious majesty, all his sheer, incomprehensible scale, reduced himself, humbled himself to the flesh of humanity. The mighty ruler of the universe took on the weakness and the vulnerability of a tiny baby. The creator of all things humbled himself by taking upon himself the limits of the creation. From so far above us to becoming one of us. That's what you can lose sight of amidst the traditional nativity scene if you're not careful. But pack away the manger, the donkey, the shepherd, the three kings, the spaceman and Elvis. And what you're left with is the most extraordinary thing of all. God on earth as a person. That's who Jesus is. That's the unique claim of Christianity. That's the truth right at the heart of the Nativity. If that's who Jesus is, according to John, then we need to see next, well, what did Jesus come to do? The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. Glory as of the only Son from the Father. John says we saw Jesus' glory. But what does that mean? What is glory? In, I don't know, about a week and a half, I suppose it is, it'll be Sports Personality of the Year on our tellies again. I don't know what your sporting highlight would be from 2025. For me, I think it would probably be the final of the Women's Euros. England and Spain. Amazing stuff, the kind of drama that you couldn't script. And then it turned out that we won. Apologies if there's any Spaniards in the room. And then as the players stood aloft that podium, as they raised that trophy in the air, as the ticker tape went everywhere, as the camera bulbs flashed, with the whole world watching, there we saw their glory. Their brilliance and achievements on display for everyone to see and acknowledge. We saw their glory. Well, John says they saw the glory of the Word. They saw the glory of Jesus. Now, if you read on in John's Gospel, please think about doing that. If you never have before, take away the copy that you've been given today. Read it through over Christmas. It won't take you very long. You'd see numerous ways in which that glory was demonstrated. Water turned into wine. Thousands of people fed with just a few loaves and fish. Paralyzed, restored. The blind, given sight. The dead, brought to life. And yet Jesus himself tells us the point at which he is at his most glorious. He tells us what, if you like, is his trophy-raising moment. Later in John, he says this. This is in John chapter 12. Jesus said, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." The hour is coming, Jesus says. The hour is now here for you to see my glory most fully. And then he says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." Jesus says that at the very beginning of the sequence of events which takes him to the cross. Jesus says that his most spectacular achievement, the most glorious event which John and the other eyewitnesses saw, is his humiliation and death. I've got to say, that is a strange and surprising kind of glory. What can possibly be glorious about that? Well, the Bible tells us that we've all got a major problem, which is the problem of sin, and its tragic, inevitable consequence, which is death. And right back from the beginning of the story, those problems have been unsolvable. There's been nobody able to break the miserable pattern of disobedience and death. No one, until the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And lived not disobeying God, but living as God made man, living the perfect life. And then dying, but not as a consequence of his sin, but as a conscious, willing choice. So that by his death, others might live. The hour has come for me to be glorified. Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Jesus says, I must die to bear the fruit of life, not just for myself, but for others. even for us. Which brings us, as we close, to the final part of our verse and to the final point, really. Why should we care? The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. Grace and truth. John says those two things are characteristics which Jesus was full of, and which sum up why this matters so much for us. Grace and truth. Now, grace is the giving of a gift that somebody doesn't deserve. I don't know, maybe you've got a secret Santa or something like that running in your office, running in your team this Christmas, and you've pulled out the name of a colleague or a boss, and you just do not have much time for them. They're just not a very nice person, to be honest. And you know what you'd like to give them this Christmas, but a piece of your mind or a smack in the chops isn't really the done thing. So you'll probably go for a box of chocolates and a nice bottle of red instead. But as you hand over the money to buy that gift, as you go to the trouble of putting a ribbon on it, as you write their name on the gift label and you place it in the pile, through gritted teeth maybe, that is a little bit of grace. The giving to somebody a gift that they don't deserve. Well, right at the heart of the Nativity here, in this verse, we find grace in the greatest Christmas present ever. Wrapped not in paper, but in flesh. Delivered not down the chimney, but ultimately up onto a cross, so that he might die for our sins, so that we might be forgiven friends of God. And we find that amazingly, by grace, this gift is for us. Because the Bible is clear on what we deserve to receive. We have, if we're honest about it, rejected, mistreated, disbelieved God. And so we deserve for him to remove himself from us. To remove the life that is in him away from us. But instead of that, we're given freedom from guilt and freedom from shame. We're given relationship with God. Even more than that, we're able to call God our Father. And in doing that, to know deep peace and love and joy now, and to be able to look forward to life at its very best forever. We do not deserve any of those things, and yet in Jesus, by grace, we're offered all of them. Because the Word became flesh and went to his death. That's the gift at the centre of the Christmas story. It's the gift at the centre of the Christian faith. And it is a gift that we can receive even today. That's the amazing grace announced in the Christmas story. But the wonderful thing is that it's not just a story. It is truth, full of grace and truth. When we look at Jesus, we don't see a kind of rose-tinted view of things as we just might wish they would be. Well, wouldn't that be lovely, if only it were real? No, we see them as they really are. John says we really saw. So as we finish, let me ask you, if that is what is held out to you, if that is what is offered to us in the true Christmas story, have you really thought about it? Have you really looked for yourself before walking away from it? As I say, take away the copy of John's Gospel and have a read of it, if you never have before. Ask any questions you've got about it. Ask the colleague that invited you. Ask one of the guys here. Find yourself a church to visit over Christmas. The guys here, I'm sure, happily recommend one to you if you don't know one near where you live. Come back here. These guys are here every Wednesday lunchtime, I guess, restarting in January. Just taking the opportunity each week to just pause amidst the busyness of life and look at a little bit of God's Word. Be a great thing to investigate, to think more about, to really scrutinize and consider these things for yourself, because surely this is potentially too good a gift to just ignore. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. That may not be your traditional nativity, but it is the very heart of the true story that we need to hear this year. And it is the best news that we will ever hear. Thanks so much for listening.